Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us for our Friday show with Lane County Senior Public Health Officer, Dr. Patrick Ludke. I'm KLCC News Director Rachel McDonald. And Dr. Ludke, thanks for being with us again.
Happy to be here. Thank you for that opportunity.
Well, we are continuing to see a huge spike in the number of coronavirus cases here in Oregon. Just today, as we just heard in Angela's report, the Oregon Health Authority announced its highest daily count of new and presumptive cases. And can you tell us a little bit about what we're seeing here in Lane County?
I can indeed. And unfortunately, it's mirroring those numbers for the state as a whole. So our number of cases through last night had increased significantly. In fact, we broke some of our own records. We had never been above 350 persons who were infectious at any one time, and the number from last evening was 446. I mean, that's a huge increase. Just 2 months ago, we had 30 or 40 people on any given day who were positive. And in the last 10 days, we've had 700 new cases. And to put that into perspective, the first person in Lane County with COVID became symptomatic on March 1st of this year, and we didn't break 700 total cases until September. So 700 cases in 10 days, and it took 5 months for the first 700 cases. That's a real change.
Wow, that's really troubling. We're in just a few days into the two-week freeze announced by the governor to help stem this pandemic. How do you think this will help things?
Well, I am hopeful that it will make a difference. It's not going to be like a light switch where all of a sudden the light's on, the light's off, or everything is moving back to perfectly normal. But it will make a difference, and that's partly because of just the epidemiological pieces of this virus that we know so far. Most people who are exposed, who become infected, will show symptoms in 5 to 7 days. So if we can decrease those exposures through part of this freeze, we will see fewer people becoming symptomatic in that 5 to 7 day period. And usually it's a few more days before they're sick enough to go to a doctor's office and get tested. So within 10 days or so, if people are complying, we should see a drop in positive cases and a drop in people going to their primary care providers to be tested. Now, that's pretty ambitious. And this is a tough time of year. Next week is Thanksgiving. Some people will be gathering. But I'm really hopeful that this will make a difference.
Well, we had a question about community spread. This is from Margaret in Eugene, who asks whether individuals who do not know where they picked up the virus were following health authority recommendations regarding masks, distance, and indoor-outdoor considerations. Is that something you can speak to?
Well, I think I can. So I was waiting for the recording. I thought maybe you had it online.
Unfortunately, no. It's an email.
Okay. So we have done several surveys in the community at various sites about a percentage of people who are masking. And we've had help from some of our college and university friends to do the same. And it's very clear that we have a differential mask use across sites. So there are some areas, some businesses where 80, 90% of people are using masks. There are other sites where mask use is 10, 20%. So clearly there are opportunities for us to comply in a much better way. So that's number one. I may have missed the first part of that question, Rachel.
Well, I think it's specifically about community spread. And maybe you could just talk about, is that how we're seeing most of the recent spike? Is that what that's coming from, is community spread? And how would you define that?
Yeah, so, you know, we have a whole lot of different categories where cases are coming from, you know, ranging from businesses to fraternities and sororities to restaurants, apartment complexes, churches, etc. But over the last few weeks, the top three have typically been private homes, and various workplaces, and then these social gatherings. And, of course, different types of people can be in each of those sites, right? Some of the social gatherings might be college students. Some of them might be a 50-year wedding anniversary. But those are the top three, and they involve, you know, two out of the three involve some type of spread in the community. The private home is the one where people may have had a party at home. So yes, absolutely. We are seeing community spread, and we're seeing it in large numbers, especially in people under age 30. We really want to address those. But community spread is the real challenge.
And, you know, we've had this promising news about vaccines. We just heard this week about Moderna's vaccine, which is found to be 95% effective against COVID-19. But are you at all concerned that the good news about vaccines might be giving people a false sense of security, you know, that the end is in sight? And it seems like maybe we need a reality check on that.
Well, I guess a little bit. I would say, you know, my initial reflex is, gosh, who doesn't want some good news in these particular times? And it's better news than I think many of us expected. There are quite a few vaccines out there that we all wish would be better. Don't we all wish we had a flu vaccine that you didn't have to get it every single year and it was more effective than it actually is? So I think many of us were expecting these COVID vaccines, at least the initial ones that reached some of their phase three trial milestones, would be 70% effective. And here we are in the 90s, which is great. But it's not 100%. So that means if you vaccinate 100 people, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7% of them will not get protection, and they are still going to be doing human activities, and they're certainly going to be breathing 10 to 16 times a minute like all of us do normally. And that means there will still be risk in the population. But on the good side, and I really think there is some good side, these two first candidates are messenger RNA candidates. They are not live virus, so we don't have to worry about all those things about having contamination with live viruses or live bacteria if it's a bacterial vaccine. We don't have to have all of those antibiotics or other things in them to prevent the growth of other living organisms. And we also don't have to grow them in mediums that cause some people to be allergic. So flu vaccine for decades was grown in chicken eggs. Some people are allergic to eggs. That's a problem. So these vaccines don't have any of those problems. So that's a really heartening. That's a really good a good piece of information, I think, going forward.
But it's going to take a little while before they'll be distributed.
Oh, it will. And both of these candidates, the Pfizer vaccine and the Moderna vaccine, require two doses to achieve that immunity that they've announced in the last 2 weeks. The Pfizer vaccine, if I remember correctly, it's two doses 21 days apart. And the Moderna vaccine is two doses 28 days apart, and they're not interchangeable. So we will have to track it. The patients, each person listening today will have to track, where did I get my first dose? When do I go back to get my second dose? What is the day again? So there's a little bit of tracking, but it's still heartening that they've worked so well. And we will, again, not get all these vaccines right away. So we're going to start getting a trickle in late December. And then we'll get more in the first quarter of next year, so January, February, March. But it's going to be a while. We have 330 million Americans, and if they all need two doses, that's 660 million doses. It's going to take a while to get the immunity that we want.
Well, we had a couple questions about masks, and here is a voicemail from Kathleen.
My name is Kathleen Shorak. Teddy, calling from Eugene, Oregon. I have read several articles that say that a mask with a valve does not protect others from the mask wearer's aerosols. So I'm wondering, why are people wearing masks with a valve at my eye doctor's office and at my dentist? These are health professionals, and they are wearing masks with valves, and that makes me uncomfortable. Or is it possible that there are masks with valves that do protect others and not just the wearer? Thank you.
Well, it's a good question. And the bottom line of this is it's all in using it appropriately. So I'm gonna harken back a few months at the beginning of the pandemic. Early on, before we knew that this virus could spread from person to person when they were asymptomatic, we said there's no value or there's limited value in using a mask in the community. And as soon as we realized that there's asymptomatic transmission 2 days, for example, before 2 days before symptoms develop, we realized that, oh boy, we're going to need to have mask use in the community. And that paradigm, that change when we realize there's asymptomatic transmission, was based even before that on our experience with SARS back in 2002-2003. People used masks. They did not use them effectively. There were multiple studies done that decade from 2002 up through about 2010 that people just don't use masks appropriately. They use them too long. They get saturated with that water vapor that we all breathe out when we fog the mirror. That, in a way, saturates the cloth in the masks, and they don't filter well. And that data told us that we really are going to have to use these masks appropriately. And some people move to these masks with valves, et cetera, but many people don't use them appropriately. They open the valves, and of course that exhales the larger droplets, bypassing some of the filtering mechanism. But in a healthcare space, people are trained to use them appropriately, and hopefully they are using them appropriately. So it's all about using it in an appropriate manner.
Okay, and here's a voicemail about where to find masks.
This is Bobby in Springfield. I hear that we're supposed to be using masks, but I don't hear anyone saying where to get the mask. I've been using two masks, one for 2 months and one for 4 months, that the church organizations have given out, but they aren't giving them out anymore. Thank you for your time.
You know, it's a good question. I think he's given us an opportunity to change the way that we're making these available. So right now, public health doesn't have a big stockpile of cloth masks that we're giving out. There are many other entities that have done so. Many businesses have masks that they give out if somebody happens to have forgotten one. I'm guilty of that. I did that recently. I borrowed my son's car, and there was no mask in his car. And this will not identify the sons because I have three of those sons, but I was disheartened that there was none in his car. And the business I was visiting gave me a mask. So there are also some social service organizations that provide masks. We've had some of the freestanding safety net clinics that have provided them. So my suggestion to this this person is, if you frequent any of these safety net facilities, ask them. If you go to a business, ask them. And then I need to take this back and say, how can we serve the community better and make this happen? And I will do that. I will absolutely do that.
Well, great. Thanks, Bobby, for that question. Maybe helping out some other folks as well. So we had a couple questions about how the virus is transmitted. This is from Jenny in Eugene, who says, I was at a local grocery store, and during the encounter with the cashier, he coughed into his hand, and we were both masked, but his cough-covered hand touched all the items I purchased. He did not use hand sanitizer after coughing. He told me his allergies were acting up. But how unsafe was this encounter, and what should I have done to protect myself?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I can close my eyes and envision, you know, making sure that the codes were indeed read and the prices were tallied, so those food pieces were touched. So the majority of transmission of this virus is large droplets that fall within 6 feet of people's speaking and coughing and singing, etc. And if this person coughed in his hand, if it was through a mask, the majority of those large droplets were blocked by the mask. But yes, maybe a couple of them could have gotten through and then got onto the milk or the eggs or the whatever else was purchased. And that being said, it's not going to live on that surface for very long. Depending on the surface, it might only live, you know, for a couple hours. And depending upon the temperature and humidity in this caller's home, it may be a day or two or five even. So I guess the safest way forward in that particular instance, assuming this person was potentially infectious, although it could have just been typical asthma exacerbation or allergies, as he said, would be to actually clean those articles. So wipe down the gallon of milk with something that kills this virus, and bleach does really well. Just get some Clorox or some other product and dilute it appropriately. The recipe is easy to find on many websites, including Lane County Public Health's website. And that's a little harder with vegetables and things, but you could use a mild soapy water if you'd like. We do not, in general, recommend doing that because the transmission from what we call contact transmission from things like a piece of mail in your mailbox is really, really, really low, and it just isn't worth all of that trouble. But in this instance, especially if she is nervous, you could do that and it would make you feel better.
All right. We're here with Dr. Patrick Ludke with Lane County Public Health. I'm Rachel McDonald, and we're taking your questions and discussing COVID-19 here on KLCC. We had a voicemail that's about when to get tested, and this is going to be from Joey.
This is Joey from Eugene, Oregon. So last night, I just returned from traveling out of state. I got a COVID test today to be safe, and it did come back negative. However, I'm still concerned that it may be too soon for the virus to show up on a test. Should I continue to quarantine, and when would be best to get another test?
So Joey is absolutely right, and this is one of the things that we hear quite commonly when there's an outbreak at a business or somewhere else where people might be concerned, is that I want to get tested right away. And when you've been exposed, it takes a while for the virus to infect you and then to grow in high enough numbers so the test can actually pick it up. And our general recommendation is after exposure, test within 5 to 7 days. Don't test that day. Don't test the next 1 or 2 days. Somewhere between about 5 to 7 days afterwards. If you feel like your exposure was a real high-risk exposure, the person was very clearly sick with symptoms that were compatible with COVID, etc., then you should quarantine in the meantime. You should say, you know, hey, I might be at risk. I don't want to infect other people. Then you should adopt these really safe behaviors and try not to expose other people while you might be incubating. But what we've seen time and time again is people want to get tested immediately after an exposure, and that test is going to be negative. And it may very well be a false negative because you did, in fact, get exposed and infected. You just don't have enough virus for the test to pick it up.
And regarding testing, you know, if someone does want to get tested, we did have a question earlier this week from Marcy on email who wanted to know why it was so difficult to get tested in Eugene and Springfield. She said her husband had what seemed like cold symptoms. The doctor told them not to get tested unless it got worse, but they still felt like they should get a test. What are some easy ways to get tests without a doctor's, recommendation?
Well, it sounds like their first reflex, their first movement to go to their doctor was the right thing. And I'm not going to second guess the assessment of that doctor that this could have been or maybe is not likely to be COVID. But what I would say is we are in such a better place today than we were even 2 months ago, but certainly 6 months ago. We have much more testing available. And just this last week, we have testing available now through the University of Oregon campus, Matthew Knight Arena. You can sign up for it. You don't have to have a doctor's order. You can go there and get this testing. I know there are testing clinics today, Monday and Tuesday. I think today and Monday are already filled up for those appointments. I think there are a few left for Tuesday, but it's much more readily available. We also have drive-up testing available at a few sites. Mackenzie Willamette Hospital has been doing it for our community for a long time, but that one does require a referral from your doctor or nurse practitioner. So I would say if to this particular person who emailed, if you really feel that this could be COVID and you want to be tested, be persistent with your provider or seek one of those other sites I mentioned.
Okay. Well, we've got this is a longer email question that I'll try to shorten as I'm reading it out to you. But this is an email from a 69-year-old man with underlying condition of cardiovascular disease who says he and his wife are planning to visit with their daughter, son-in-law, and 3 grandchildren. The daughter is a teacher. The children attend school and have some contact with other students and teachers on a part-time basis. They do wear masks in the classroom. And during the holiday, they plan to visit outdoors for a hike or play in a playground. They will all be wearing masks, but they want to know how much risk is there of transmitting or being infected by the virus within this setting and scenario. And how much are we at risk of transmitting or being infected by the virus if 1 or 2 or 3 of our grandchildren initiate physical contact with a hug?
Well, I sure like the fact that masking was mentioned, and that will really decrease the risk. However, one of the persons, a 69-year-old with cardiovascular disease, is clearly in, you know, risk groups. So older, not quite old, but older, late 60s, and also has cardiovascular disease. And we've seen time and time again in studies that cardiovascular disease puts people at increased risk. So this person is right to be safe and be preventive. If they mask, if they do this activity outside, if they don't do any more than just that one hug, so happy to see you, you know, son, daughter, etc., the risk will be really, really low. And I think that I would promote that activity. I would promote doing an outdoor hike, maintaining a little bit of social distancing, being careful in the car when you drive over there. And if one of those kids or one of the adults does develop COVID symptoms, have them pull themselves out of that family reunion for a little bit of time. I can't give you absolute numbers. What I can say, though, is that still, as we've seen through many outbreaks, 80% of people who get infected or get exposed have either a mild infection or asymptomatic infection. It's that other 20% that get more severe disease. So the chances are 4 out of 5 times you won't even know that you're infected. You might think it's just the common cold. So wear a mask, do your activity outside, beware of how do you get to that activity in the car, et cetera. See if you can have a few cars with some social distancing, so to speak, in the car. Open the windows a little bit. So if anybody is symptomatic, you will let in fresh air and you will be almost certainly safe.
We've got just a couple minutes left, but just, you know, regarding airborne exposure, how concerned should we be about an office setting in which people are wearing masks?
You know, I think that we have now 8 months, approaching 9 months of experience with this virus in North America, and there are documented transmissions from airborne, those small little particles that float in the air, but the numbers are very low. We are not seeing many of those cases, and I think the risk, as long as people are masked and they're using them appropriately and they're doing the other infection control procedures that are recommended, cleaning high-touch surfaces like doorknobs, computer keyboards, those are the things that are used by several people frequently, the risk is really quite low. So I'm heartened by that. We're not going to stop every infection. We're not. But we want to prevent most of them, and especially those in high-risk people.
Well, thanks so much, Dr. Ludke. We're going to wrap this up and really appreciate you taking the time to talk with us. And we're going to be taking next week off for Thanksgiving, so we'll see you back again next month.
Thank you, Rachel. Happy Thanksgiving to all.
Thank you. Dr. Patrick Ludke is Chief Medical Officer with Lane County Public Health. We had production assistance from Angela Kellner, Mallory Begay, and Jason Brown. I'm KLCC News Director Rachel McDonald. Enjoy your weekend and enjoy your Thanksgiving.